time you start buying your
energy. Power is gonna restore 15 to 20 million jobs. I am your future.
Isn't it about time for a change?
We're our national leaders.
AmericanWorkersRadio.com. You're listening to American Workers Radio, a national network promoting American-made products with your host, Michael Blihash.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to another edition of American Workers Radio here, broadcasting on 860 AM radio, as well as on the internet, heard over the world by going to AmericanWorkersRadio.com or click on to Radio5000.com. Well, today we have some very distinguished guests over here. I'm with Larkin Connolly, and I'm going to ask Larkin, first of all, to give us a brief outline of what Larkin does.
Good morning, Michael. How are you?
I'm doing great.
And good morning, Henry. And good morning to Rick Carlton, who is sitting right to my left. Michael, I'm the president and chairman of SCORE Philadelphia, which is a local nonprofit associated with the Small Business Administration, and we counsel small businesses. We offer face-to-face mentoring, seminars, and different types of classes to try to educate the small businessman into either becoming a better and stronger businessman or the wannabes, so to speak, who want to get into a small business. We help them over those hurdles necessary to become a small businessman.
Larkin, very good. We also have a special guest here with us today for the very first time. Rick Carlton, I'm going to ask you to give us a little background about yourself.
Thank you, Michael. Good morning. I founded and am president of Freedom Financial Group Incorporated, a financial planning firm. We specialize in working with people near or in retirement on alternatives to traditional investing, what we call risk-free retirement, where we basically show folks how to get off the roller coaster of the stock market, get into programs that will give you market upside with contractual guarantees against market downside. And I am a small business owner.
Very good. And we also have Nicholas Gruch, our member of the panel. And Nick, what do you have to say on this very warm day in Philadelphia?
Well, it was a very hot run from my office this morning. I barely made it out alive, but I'm here. So
very good. You know, we've been talking for quite a while about what are we going to do to help America's businesses get back in business again. Before I go to that subject, I'm going to ask all of you to go to your telephone, invite family members and friends to tune in to 860 AM radio. If you're living in Philadelphia in the tri-state area, or anywhere in the world, have them check us out and click on the Listen Live link by going to AmericanWorkersRadio.com. Today, Nick, I'm going to ask you to do something special. We have two distinguished guests, and I'm going to ask you to speak with them as if you were ready to open up a business tomorrow. What would you like to know should be done? Now, Larkin's been consulting with people on doing that. He can answer that. Rick has been around the world. He just was in Europe, as was Larkin, who's going to report on some of his ventures in Europe. What would you do? What would you want to ask Larkin if you went to see him in his office about opening a new business?
All right, well, let's talk about the business that I would be opening first. I'm going to get into character here. I just recently took the last of a series of 7 architectural exams. With any luck, I'll have passed it, so I will be a licensed architect. Now, what I want to do is I want to be a sole proprietor of an architectural design firm. Most likely, I would start off on my own. I would have software programs that I would use to help minimize my effort, maximize the return in terms of providing deliverables to clients. And I think that the main question would be, since times are tough, and since I don't have a very large stash of capital, what would I need to do in order to create some sort of cash flow initially? What would I need to do in order to court clientele? And what would I need to do in terms of, let's say, taxation, in terms of regulation? I do know that, you know, as far as licensure is concerned, there are regulations at the state level that I would need to meet, which, you know, are easy enough and affordable enough. And also, I suppose, what type of a plan would I need to develop in order to present to banks, to financiers, to future clients, to potential clients, and that type of thing?
Well, it's interesting that you brought up the banks last, because they're really your primary concern. I call them the B client, or the B concern. The A concern to me, and I think, Nick, you probably already have this covered, to be a successful businessman, you must have the complete and unconditional support of your family mm-hmm. and the people around you. So it's an absolute necessity that you bring them into the process, make sure they understand what you're doing, make sure they understand what the family sacrifices are going to be. You have to get complete and total buy-in. As an aside, I would say that I bought a food business in Richmond, Virginia, 10 or 11 years ago, and I owned that business for 5 years. The first 3 years, I did not have family buy-in. It was up at 3 a.m, opening the kitchen, preparing meals ready to eat, and my boys had to get out of bed pretty early and come to work, and my daughter, who's now an MBA accountant bookkeeper going for her CPA, none of them were very happy about that circumstance. And what I failed to do was to get the buy-in up front for them to understand mm-hmm. what the sacrifices were going to be, what part they played in this family small business. So that's A. B is getting the money. Make sure you have the concept financed. And that examination all begins with a business plan. Mm-hmm. At SCORE, we prefer not to even counsel with clients who won't write a business plan. It's a complete waste of time and effort. I know that. I've got that in the back of my mind. It's got to be put on paper. And what gets answered on paper, it's everything from a mission statement, which is your elevator speech and explains to everybody exactly what you're doing. It's a complete set of financials. It's an executive summary. It is that vehicle that represents the buy-in of everything from the buy-in of your family to exactly almost to the penny, hoping that all of the projections that you make are correct, the amount of money that you're going to need, the cash flow that the business is going to generate, and the demand for capital that's going to be part of the upfront issue when you're in the process of starting that business. So it's get the family buy-in first. Mm-hmm. You know they love you. It's just a matter of making sure that they love you financially, physically, and the efforts and the things that they're going to be denied, especially if you have children, things are going
to
be tough.
There have been relationships in my life where I would definitely need to ensure that there is that buy-in, because, I mean, it gets tough, you know, and money is the number one reason that relationships fall apart, you know, and let's face it, when it comes down to it, when they do fall apart, the money is what people are concerned about. Yeah, so.
Yes, very much so.
When your children are used to being provided for relatively well, as your kids obviously have been, starting a small business is an investment. It really is.
I have children. Do you know something I don't know?
No. Well, I was.
But I appreciate that.
I was speaking in the royal we.
Of course.
The royal you. But a bank's not going to talk to you. Private investors and an unconventional investor, they're absolutely not going to speak to you unless they can sit down and read a business plan.
Rightfully so. I mean, it makes the most sense. You need to have the bases covered, and you need to have... It needs to be evident to everybody, not just to you. And that's one of the biggest problems that I find in any business dealings, you know, particularly in architecture. People think that people know what other people are thinking. Rather, a person might think that this person across the table knows what I'm thinking, and that's not the truth. Hard copies. You know, we live in a paperless society now, but paper copies are pretty critical.
Yeah, much of a situation that I rue myself. My children are making me text.
I'm sorry.
I think they all got together
a conspiracy.
It's an absolute conspiracy. Nobody talked to Dad unless he texts.
Let's converse as little as possible with our voices and use our fingers as much as we possibly can.
So, and I also give a speech about a business plan. When you're finished that last sentence in that business plan, you put the final dot on paper and you print it out before you come from the printer back to the chair that you were sitting in, that business plan changes.
Mm-hmm.
It's
mm-hmm.
a living instrument. Yes. But
it's good to read that business plan yep. a dozen in one time.
It's also good to revise it.
I think it's good for your employees and the people that you're working with. Well, maybe not the people that you're working with as outside consultants, because there could be proprietary information in that business plan, I would think, right? Not so much?
There may be, and there's also a way of concealing proprietary
right.
information.
But your employees should know it, too. That's one of the problems that I've had in the past with firms that I've worked with in the past. It's that, you know, if you want me to buy in to what we're trying to achieve with this firm, and, you know, big picture stuff. I mean, as an architect, as a designer, I like big picture, and I like to be able to buy into something, but, you know, when have I been privy to any of that kind of information? Not that often.
And you talk about buy-in. I was over in Italy, and I know Michael wants to talk about this in detail a little bit, but I was in a restaurant and enjoying my meal and overwhelmed with the congeniality of absolutely everybody involved. Mm-hmm. And I come from a kitchen. I'm a wannabe cook. And so I always ask if I'm enjoying my meal to either see the chef or may I go back into the back. And I went back into the back, and in fact, the guy cooking was the owner. And I said, I'm overwhelmed with your staff. He said, really? I said, I'm overwhelmed. They're kind. They're considerate. Sometimes you get this in America, sometimes you don't. Mm-hmm. And he said, well, the waitress waiting on you is my daughter. The guy that was cleaning and bussing the tables is her husband. And the other one is my other son-in-law. His point to me was, in Italy, small businesses are family businesses.
And the other thing, though, in Italy and in a lot of parts of Europe, this is something that my mom has always talked with me about, because she's done a lot of travel in Europe. And one of the things about, for instance, that food services industry over there is that it is a very honorable profession to find yourself in, you know. It's not just a means to an end, which is what it is for a lot of young people here in America, particularly now with the way that the economy is and people coming out of college without having jobs available. And so it's just a step in the road, whereas it is a career. It is, you know, there's a Monty Python quote, so I became a waiter.
Yeah.
And if you don't like it, you can,
yeah,
know,
right.
piss off. But the thing is, it's there's that difference. There's that approach to that type of a career, that type of a condition, which it's not a condition for them. It's their career. Whereas here, something like that's a condition. And so, you know, the attitude affects the service. Yeah, and vice versa.
I have a client here in Philadelphia who's trying to start a pharmacy, and she's having some capital problems, and we're getting over those. The business plan is done, and we're out shopping that plan, trying to find the capital to start it. Well, she ran a little short of money, and so I said, there's nothing. You're licensed in 5 states. You used to work for Rite Aid and a big job. Time to go back to work. I mean, it's time to go back to work until we can facilitate this plan. And she was moping around, and, you know, I don't want to be a pharmacist. I want to be an owner. And I said, wait a minute.
Oh.
Being a pharmacist is an extremely honorable job. And you're learning everything from customer service to the processes of retail when you're doing that. I hear the same thing from attorneys. Two people I know are both waiting tables, can't find jobs in the legal world. And they, you know, walking around with their shoulders bent over like there's some shame in being a waiter. And I said, whoa.
There's absolutely. I mean, I worked as a waiter. I think that everybody in America should spend some time working as a waiter in the weeds.
Yep.
So that we start tipping better, and so that we start appreciating the place that we are. You know, like, I complain all the time about my job, but then I think about what it could be like, and I'm okay.
Yes, exactly.
We're going to pause for a minute, and we'll be back, and we're going to go to our second guest, Rick, when we come back, and ask him what he would recommend to start a new business. Michael Steinman, attorney at law, has two offices in Philadelphia, one at 17th and JFK Boulevard in Center City, and the other at 8510 Busselton Avenue in Northeast Philadelphia. Call attorney Michael Steinman's office at 215-564-1866. That's 215-564-1866. Or in the evening or weekends at area code 215-322-0235. Michael Steinman, attorney at law, always available to assist you in the English or Polish language. The Polish Roman Catholic Union of America, known as the PRCUA, established in 1873, is the oldest Polish-American life insurance organization in the United States. They offer outstanding life insurance plans for men, women, and children from $5,000 all the way up to $1 million of coverage per person. The PRCUA is a national fraternal organization, so people can secure life insurance plans and annuities from anywhere in the USA. Their main office is in Chicago, and their satellite office is in Port Richmond, Philadelphia, at 2636 East Allegheny Avenue. The Philadelphia office is open Monday through Friday between 9 a.m. and 4 p.m., and if you're not available during those times, representatives will meet with you in the evening or during the weekend. For more information, call the PRCUA Philadelphia office at area code 215-425-3807. That's 215-425-3807. Polka Deli is located at 2719 East Allegheny Avenue in the Port Richmond section of Philadelphia, and they feature Polish-style meats and deli products and a selection of imported products from Poland and Polish-American products. Stop by Polka Deli, 2719 East Allegheny Avenue, and see the great selection of products they offer. For more information, call Polka Deli at area code 215-634-3750. That's 215-634-3750. Well, welcome back to our Wednesday edition of American Workers Radio. And I have our three distinguished guests with us today. Rick Carlton is here, and Larkin Conley, along with Nicholas Gruck. And we're talking about ways of getting back into business. Last weekend, we were talking about what were the suggestions that more businesses could be attracted to the area. Some said, well, we need more enterprise zones. We need a 10-year tax credit for new businesses getting into the system and help employ new people. There was also discussions about job training and people upgrading their skills. And also, they were talking about local businesses need to network with one another to do more things here in the USA so that we'll be able to produce what we use on a regular basis right here in our home territories, closer to home, to save energy and everything else. Those were all great suggestions. But we're going to go back to our discussion today, which is, what do we need to do to get into a business? And I know Rick has been in business himself for some time, and I'm going to ask him to give some words of wisdom.
Well, you know, thank you, Michael. When you talk about starting a small business, I think the operative word is small. Many people feel that they have to get in over their head, get very expensive, have elaborate accommodations and so on and so forth, and that can be a killer. Start small and grow is one thing. We talked about planning. You know, Yogi Berra once said, if you don't know where you're going, you're going to wind up someplace else. So a plan becomes a very, very important part of any business. It's different today than it was years ago. I know a gentleman who, back in the 70s, saw a need for coffee machines in offices. And so he bought a couple of these coffee machines, and he put them in the trunk of his car, and he bought some coffee, and he started getting some clients, and he would deliver them. He'd go door to door to office buildings, and it grew, and it grew, and it grew. Today, he probably would not be able to do that, because if the coffee police caught him with coffee in the trunk of his car, it would be unsanitary. It's not this, it's not that, you know, and where's your license, and so on and so forth. So there's a lot of obstacles that you've got to be aware of today. Businesses are different. You know, my business, I started a business with no clients and an intangible product. I don't deliver anything to you. I'm in the financial business. So it's an intangible product. Marketing becomes very important. Finding people to talk to becomes very important. And one place that you can really get hurt is on the expense side of things. If you come to my office for a consultation, don't expect to see a lot of leather and mahogany because you're not going to see it. If you want to see that, go to one of the big brokerage firms and pay outrageous fees to allow them to sit in leather chairs and with their mahogany walls. Be ready to change and adapt because the world moves very quickly, and if you can't change with it, the president of AT&T years ago said, when the pace of change outside the organization exceeds the rate of change within the organization, the end is near. And then, as we were talking earlier, draw on experience. There are many people who have gone before you, and if they are successful in business, one thing I guarantee you is they'll love to sit and talk about it and tell you about it and mentor you. And, you know, SCORE is a great organization because that's what they're all about.
Very good. Well said. And if I was going into business, one of the biggest questions that I had Larkin asked to me last week was, where would I go to find some sort of a guiding plan on the internet to even allow me to know if I want to go into business? Give me a step-by-step. This is what you have to do. Is there such a place on the internet that I could direct someone before they even made it to SCORE?
Yeah, Michael, first of all, that's probably the rudimentary, the step that we do at SCORE, is that vetting process to make sure that that individual knows what to expect about going into a small business. If their response to the business plan and the first year activity and la la la, if their response to that is just make sure somewhere in that financial that you put my BMW in there, then you know you got to vet this person out of going into a small business. They don't understand. So it is a process, and when one comes to SCORE, when we vet you as a candidate to find out exactly which one of our counselors is best for you, in that onboarding process, we determine if there's a need to even have a second or a third meeting. And I'll be very honest with you, there are a lot of people that come to SCORE with two real serious mistakes. One, they don't want to be in small business, they just think it's a glamour issue. And two, they're looking for a job. They're not looking to run a small business. They need a job.
And
they
want a job. Running a small business can really be very difficult.
Well, you better be mentally, emotionally, and financially prepared to run a small business. And if you don't have all three, and that's what we tap our head, the mental side of it. We touch our heart, the emotional side of it, and you touch your wallet, the financial side of it. And if you don't have those three bases covered, you either have to work it out until you do have it right, or you need to continue to send your resume out and find jobs and work for other small businesses.
See, many of the people that contact the radio and email me back as a result of the commentaries, they say, well, I can't find a job, so maybe I should go into business. And I say to them immediately, well, when was the last time you were employed? And they say, well, it was about 6 months ago, and I'm worried that I'm going to be cut soon, but I'm thinking if I could fill one of those local stores in the malls that has a available sign on it with something, not, you know, already prepared, with something, maybe I could make a success of it because I do have family and friends that would frequent the place. And I say to them, well, first of all, look at your own resume and see what you have to offer. If you were going to employ yourself, would you want to employ yourself? If you were the guy on the other side of the desk, and then see if you really are going to make a success of your business by what you have on your resume. That can, you know, that tells you where you are right now. If you've been in and out of jobs, five jobs in 4 years, then already there's a question, how long are you going to stay in business?
And I can also stick an aside to all of this. The Philadelphia marketplace, as far as starting a small business is concerned, is probably one of the most overserved markets in the country. When I go to conventions and to discuss this type of thing internally with SCORE and externally with SBA and other people, they're amazed at the things that I report that are available in Philadelphia. It's a huge marketplace. I mean, we have Wharton, and they have an SBDC, which helps small businesses, mm-hmm. WORC, Women's Opportunity Resource Center, Fox School, associated with Fox. The Philadelphia Free Library has an entire floor of their Vine Street operation dedicated to small businesses and the research necessary. SCORE, there's myriads of help in this marketplace. It's overwhelming. It really, really is.
Now, Larkin, there's no age or income requirement or anything like that to come in and be.
You know, a SCORE member in this district, in this area, out in Pottstown or somewhere, told me a story of three 16-year-old boys that came to him with an idea. They came to SCORE with an idea, and they went to the SBA and they sent them to SCORE. They wrote a little business plan. They started this thing. They started it in their basement, and I, for reasons that I won't get into, can't name names or say anything, but other than the company's in King of Prussia, Pennsylvania. These three teenagers at 16 started this company manufacturing a small item and packaging it in their basement last year. They both, all three of them, opted out of college and continued to work on their business. And I'm playing on my memory now, somewhere between 3 and 5 years ago when they opted out of college. They all would have graduated from college by now. Last year, they did $61.4 million in sales. $61 million in sales.
So this says it all. Boy.
Hey,
you got to give me that. Maybe we can go over and talk turkey with them.
Only in America can you put a rock in a box, punch a couple holes in it, and sell it as a pet. Mm-hmm. And make millions, by the way. Mm-hmm. Only in America can you charge $49 and get a certificate that says there's a star named after you. I was given this as a gift a couple of years ago. My partner gives me a certificate that at certain this angle and that angle, there's a star. Terrific. You know, I mean, it's
yeah,
it's
I hear,
great
I hear
stuff,
that.
Though.
I think the inhabitants of that star might have something to say about that, though.
But I think that I get very excited when I hear people talk about things like starting a business in their basement or starting in their driveway or wherever they may have started, because that's how the biggest businesses, hey, that's where Microsoft came from, right? So and Apple,
Hewlett Packard as well.
Yeah, it's just amazing.
I don't have the list in front of me, but it's overwhelming. I mean, it's Walmart, it's Kmart, it's Sears. All of the major companies started in somebody's garage, or somebody's basement, or a small storefront in Chicago. To Rick's point, this is exactly one of the major points that you have to understand. Please don't come in and start a small business and know, you know, when am I going to do $12 million?
Mm-hmm. Right. Start small and try to grow.
Right. Do everything right and the $12 million will come.
One of the things...
By the way, just 1 second, Nick. It better be something you love to do.
Yep.
Because you got to work so hard that if you don't love it, you're going to give up.
Yep. And, you know, coming back to the notion of these young men opting out of college, it's interesting, you know. For instance, the only way that, say, a person in my shoes as an architectural designer could actually become an architect legally is to attend college. And, you know, and then there's all of that leads up to it. I had to attend 3 years of grad school after undergrad when I was an engineer. And now, hopefully, like I said, within a week or two, I'll know if I'm actually a licensed architect after all these exams. And so it's interesting that, you know, these young men created their own fortune, their own opportunity, without ever having to do that. And that calls to mind a conversation I had with another gentleman a couple weeks ago, who was telling me about how he didn't go to college either. He worked as a stationary engineer because he started when he was 16 or 17, I believe, and he's been working in that field for up to, I think it's 7 years now, and he does very well. And he didn't need to attend college. And now, after he's gotten all this experience as a stationary, which is technically HVAC, mechanical type of engineering, where he manages a building, he's thinking about going to school now that he's actually established himself in a place where he's got the expertise, but also he's had his boots on the ground, and he has some savings that he can use to pay for the education as opposed to taking loans that will really put a damper on any kind of small business should he ever desire to create something. You know, you need to have that cash flow, or you need to have that financial backing, like you said, so that you can actually pursue that type of opportunity. And so it's the new paradigm that's being created, I think, here, which is... It's fantastic.
Well said.
We're going to take a brief break now and enjoy some messages from our sponsors. I want to thank you for tuning in. We'll be continuing our broadcast today. Go to your telephone, invite family members and friends to tune in to 860 on the AM dial or from anywhere in the world by going to AmericanWorkersRadio.com.
For all of your banking needs, call on Washington Savings Bank, which offers checking and savings accounts, IRAs, CDs, home mortgages, and home equity loans, along with a host of other services at its five offices at 2701 East Allegheny Avenue in Port Richmond, 2548 East Lehigh Avenue in Fishtown, and in the Northeast at 2900 Comley Road, 10663 Busselton Avenue, and 8729 Frankfort Avenue. Banking hours at all offices of Washington Savings Bank are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m., Friday from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m., and Saturday from 9 a.m. to 12 noon. The Port Richmond Kazimierzwielki branch at Edgemont and Allegheny Avenue is also open on Sunday from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. For more information about the many services provided by Washington Savings Bank, call the main number in Philadelphia at area code 215-698-9400. That's area code 215-698-9400. Or visit a Washington Savings Bank near you.
The office of Leon Monkowski, attorney at law, is located at 2624 East Allegheny Avenue in the Port Richmond section of Philadelphia. His office is open Monday through Friday from 9 in the morning till 5 in the evening, and he does have additional evening hours on Tuesdays. For more information or an appointment, call Leon Monkowski, attorney at law, at 215-739-8521. That's 215-739-8521.
After a long day of play, give your kids what they really want. Great tasting snacks and meals from Giorgio. Giorgio's delicious mozzarella sticks, toasted American cheese sticks, and macaroni cheese triangles will satisfy even your pickiest eater. Since 1928, Giorgio has stood for quality and nutrition, so you can count on them for great taste and convenient snacks and appetizers. Look for these great Giorgio products and more in your grocer's freezer, and for recipe ideas, log on to GiorgioFoods.com.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, thanks for staying with us here on 860 AM Radio, and I'm with three very distinguished people. Larkin Connolly, the president and director of SCORE. I have Rick Carlton here, who is a financial expert, and we also have Nicholas Grock, our member of our panel and an architect. As they were talking today, I was thinking about our Buy American Made campaign and how just a few years ago, I started this campaign to bring attention to the fact that something happened in America, that everything is now made elsewhere. So how are the American people going to be employed and stay employed and have any kind of future? And just as I took this thing in baby steps with the help of a few technical people like Henry and John Groch and others who were, you know, looking at some of the things that I wrote and being, you know, critical or encouraging, the campaign moved forward, and just like any small business, and this is not a business, we haven't made any money. We're going to try to make some money in the future. But the campaign, the idea of uniting people to get behind something and stick with it, has really been very important. Today, 4 years later, we see that our campaign is being listed on national radio programs. It's on NPR. Diane Sawyer promotes it, David Muir, the Buy American, Make campaign is becoming a bigger and bigger issue. About 22 radio stations are picking up our message and rebroadcasting it on their public service announcement time. So we're doing something positive, and it's a lot of work. It's more work than I ever thought would happen to me. It's the same thing. Every week I have to produce a new commentary, mm-hmm. a new subject. It has to go out to all of our people. That we have thousands of people on our internet email list, and that has to go out. And it's the same thing with any small business. We have to start from scratch and just try to continue it. In the future, the goal of what we're doing is going to be getting the products that are made here in the USA to come on board with us so that we can promote them in a bigger way, direct people to their stores. Larkin said something earlier, which I don't know exactly how that went, but when Walmart started, I understood that 95% of everything that was in that store was American-made. Is that true?
Well, it almost had to be. I mean, I don't have the facts in front of me, but I think Walton started that back in the 20s.
In Bentonville, Arkansas.
I've been to Bentonville, and I've tried as a salesman to sell, not the other one, Sam's Club, but not Walmart. But, yeah, it would also almost had to have been all American-made goods. We didn't have that issue back mm-hmm. then.
And what happened? What made it turn to what it is? I know Rick had mentioned something a little earlier.
Oh, it's just a desire to have more and more and more and more. Not the right things at the right price, but more. Everybody in this country wants more.
But see, the point is, without a job, how long can you afford more? And then you go into debt more. As you're looking for more, you wind up with less.
Mm-hmm. And one of the biggest problems, one of the reasons that jobs are going out of this country versus coming in, is taxes. We have the highest corporate tax rate in the world now. We have the distinction of being number one in corporate taxes. Regulations like crazy every single day coming out of Washington, D.C. And so if you're General Electric, where does it make more sense to make your light bulbs when you know that your number one responsibility is to your stockholders? It is less expensive to make your light bulbs and less regulation in China and Mexico than in the United States. The gross domestic product of the United States is lower by right at the moment than that of Mexico. We need people in Washington, D.C. who understand business. Washington, D.C. has too many lawyers and not enough business people who can tell you. All government has to do is get out of the way. I'm not saying that we should have smog and pollution and no regulations at all. That would be ludicrous. But there are far too many regulations, far too many impediments, far too much government red tape for the big companies who do big hiring, and for the little companies, they're not hiring at all. And they're not hiring at all because they're doing it themselves. They've increased productivity among the people that they have. And right at the moment, we have very little hiring because they don't know what's going to happen. At the end of this year, the payroll tax is supposed to go up by 2%. It was a temporary deal. Well, how do you now say, okay, we want more from you, when we gave you something on a temporary payroll tax holiday? At the end of this year, all the Bush tax cuts go away unless something is done. At the end of this year, we could very easily fall off a cliff. So this is a crazy time. And because it's so crazy, those that would hire sit on the sidelines.
Rick, I have a question for you. If you were going into business today, would you find a big difference in how you first went into business 25 years ago?
That's pretty interesting. Probably not, because my business involves knowledge of the financial area, which I have. I didn't have it when I went into business, but I got it quickly and grew over the years. But my business involves inspiration and perspiration. I still, to this day, don't sleep past 4:30 in the morning on a Saturday or a Sunday. I'm up early. By the time I get showered and come downstairs, my wife, you were talking, Larkin, earlier about your family's got to be involved. My wife has breakfast for me every morning because she knows this guy's got to go out and roll the wheelbarrow around and come back with money. And I'm not going to be home until about 9 o'clock tonight. There will be something waiting for me. It'll be light, but it'll be waiting for me. So you got to, you know, it's a team. But today, if in a tangible world, especially in the city of Philadelphia, to start a business of a tangible product is very difficult. Like I said about the chap who started the coffee business years ago. Today, they'd have all kinds of fines and levies and everything else that they would put on him. But I do remember that as he got successful, then he branched out to candy and these honor boxes in offices where you have the box and you can buy candy if you're an office worker and so on and so on. And he took me on a tour of his warehouse, which is really crummy in a pretty crummy section of Philadelphia. But he noticed that two Reese's peanut butter cups were missing and he went ballistic. The guy is now the chairman of his company and he knows how many peanut butter cups were in this pile on the... But that's because he's living it and breathing it every single day. Most business people who have a bookkeeper or someone who does their accounting, which I don't take care of the books in my business. I don't take care of the money. But I can tell you what's in the account. Within hundreds, I know what's in that account because I watch what moves every day because it just that's the way I was earlier. You really have to live it and breathe it.
I had to sign 31 checks at S&E Food in Richmond, Virginia every Friday. I knew what was in that account Thursday by the penny.
Mm-hmm. By the penny,
by
absolutely.
The penny. And I was usually out Tuesday and Wednesday picking up receivables. You know, so, yeah, you have a tendency to live it.
Larkin, if you were going into a business today, I know you've been in a few businesses, what would be the difference that you could report from what it was 25 years ago?
I think Rick has hit the nail right on the head. It's there's a lot of regulations. There really are. I mean, the regulations are overwhelming. And in Philadelphia, all you have to do if you really want to understand how the city operates is decide you want to get a food truck. Let's just pick food trucks. and go down to L&I and stand in line, get your number, stand in line, and walk up to the window and say, I'd like to get in the food truck business. And then come back and tell me what they tell you. Come back and show me the thickness of papers that looks like a Manhattan phone book of forms and licenses and inspections and stuff that has to be done. And this all comes about, this I'm gonna get a little away from my having my score hat on. This all comes about when you have an enormous number of people on the government dole working for the government.
There's too many service-related people in the system.
You have to find something for them to do. I mean, they can't stand around. So.
Right. Someone mentioned this morning on the news the best thing that we could do is get rid of the EPA.
Yeah. I might have to take exception. You mean the Environmental Protection Agency?
Yes, they said, well, we have to scale it down.
I don't think we need to get rid of it because that would unleash too many hazards that we got rid of. Mm-hmm. But it certainly needs to be scaled back. It certainly needs to be scaled back because it's grown beyond its monstrous self.
It's completely out of control.
I think they said that statement in order to make the EPA defend itself. All the good that it does and what would happen without it, and did start a conversation on the radio where people say, well, we can't allow that because pollution would, you know, go double. But we also have to consider a few years ago when they were having the Olympics in China, we had a number of groups coming over here who were checking out our colleges and places like that to see how they could best be hospitable to the athletes coming over there for the Olympics. And they stopped into our center here in Center City, and one of the groups said something very interesting to me. He said, well, For the next month, we've stopped all production in China because we want to clean up the environment for when the athletes come. And then he said, then everybody who's was employed in the places that were manufacturing are now sprucing up the cities, streets and neighborhoods and flowers and everything so that when the athletes come, it's like, wow, this is the greatest place that you could have the Olympics. But then he made a statement to me after telling me all that. He made a statement to me, and I mentioned this some time ago. He said, and when the Olympics are over, we will begin our second industrial revolution. And we will go. We are now going around the world looking for every imaginable possibility of new businesses, products that the American people want, products the European people want, products that others are going to need. We want to go into those businesses so that we could be competitive with the Americans or the Europeans or whatever. And this sort of scares me, because where do we come in? Where is the American revolution? What are we going to do to turn that around? With all the new modern technologies that we have in the world, there's no excuse for us anymore to not be able to be totally in competition with every product imaginable. We'll be back in a few minutes with our three distinguished guests.
The Polish National Alliance, America's largest ethnic fraternal life insurance and investment organization, encourages you to open a PNA annuity. Your deposits are tax deferred. You can open the account with $500 and then make future deposits in any amount in your tax deferred annuity. For more information about PNA annuities, IRAs, and life insurance programs, call the Polish National Alliance at their toll-free number 1-800-621-3723. That's 1-800-621-3723. And complete details will be sent to you from the national office. When you call, you can also request that a local PNA representative contact you directly with further details about PNA annuities, IRAs, and their many insurance programs. Call the Polish National Alliance at 1-800-621-3723. That's 1-800-621-3723. Yolanda Konopacka de Scipio, attorney at law, is available to handle your legal matters. She's part of the well-known firm Bennett, Bricklin, and Salzburg, and works in all areas of the law, including immigration, personal injury, compensation, and real estate. Yolanda Konopacka de Scipio is fluent in both English and Polish, and welcomes clients to contact her from throughout the Philadelphia area and New Jersey. If you need legal assistance, call Yolanda Konopacka de Scipio at area code 215-423-4824. That's area code 215-423-4824.
Dr. Eva Machak has two dental offices in Philadelphia to serve you. One at 3084 Armingo Avenue in Port Richmond, another at 4250 Richmond Street in the Bridesburg section. Dr. Eva Machak will provide you with quality dental care at affordable prices. For more information or an appointment, call Dr. Eva Machak at area code 215-739-2787. That's 215-739-2787. Dr. Machak speaks both English and Polish. Welcome back to another edition of American Workers Radio. Today we're talking about what would it take to go into business, and we went into a dozen and one ways of explaining it. But our panel today is very interesting. They've all been traveling around. Larkin just came from a trip. Rick was on a trip a month ago. Nick is going on a trip in a few days. So,
a long trip.
We're all going to see these things going on in the world. Mm-hmm. But my question is, Larkin, as you went around Europe on your trip, how many foreign-made products did you find in those particular countries?
Not a lot. I spent all of the time away in Italy. Started in Rome, spent a day, and then went up to Tuscany and rented a house and a van, two other couples, and we went from there and scattered out to Siena and Florence and Assisi and visited all of the towns that we wanted to see and all of the shops and all the shopkeepers. And, you know, it's just different. And this is very much Italy, an Italian issue, because I've been to England, where there are big box stores and large marketers. In Italy, you don't see that. You pull into a village.
Yeah, it's about neighborhoods and it's about communities, small communities, not...
That is the way America was.
Yeah.
And somehow or other, we have to do that. I was out on an event a few weeks ago, and someone was saying to me, it's going to be so hard. I'm always listening to your radio, you know, ideas and your commentaries, and it's going to be hard to start a company and, you know, find a location. So I was thinking to myself, maybe at some point SCORE can advise a few, 10 people, say 10 people want to get into some kind of a business and they have ideas that are going to be viable. They present a very well presented plan to Larkin, and Larkin says, good, great, we can move forward. You got the finances, you got enough family, you got enough friends, and you have an idea that could be sustained. How about if we put 8 or 10 of these new businesses in one of these locations that's now empty and allow them to try to survive in there, pay the expenses, and maybe move forward and do something positive for themselves.
You mean like a studio-type environment?
Like a studio environment where this floor, the northwest portion of the building, is operated by this company and that company. I mean, we hear about what they do in Zug. You have 1,000 companies operating out of one little building. They're all little... mailboxes.
But think about all the ideas that are going to be intermingling in that type of a condition. I mean, let's face it, one of the best ways to, I guess, promote your business or generate a new business for this new paradigm is to draw from other areas and diversify and figure out other ways that, now, granted, you know, it could create competition, but I think that's kind of what we all believe in, is that, you know, you're involved or connected or interacting with people that are in different fields, but then maybe your fields start to intermingle in some way. And then it just kind of pushes everybody to achieve a little bit more in that situation. That's the studio environment in a nutshell, you know?
What would you think of that idea, Larkin, if 8 or 10 different businesses, not in competition with one another, but 8 or 10 businesses, would that help them financially with the cost of operations and overhead and insurance?
Yeah. It's always kind of amazed me the number of people in this city, both residents and people visiting, who visit what I think is one of the most delightful places in the city to go, Reading Market. Mm-hmm. And don't walk away from that going, wait a minute, why doesn't every city have this? Why doesn't every section of the city have a Reading Market like this that serves the local public? If I want a Reading Market, I got to go to Reading Market. I mean, the closest thing is the outdoor Italian market, which isn't quite still the Italian market, but it's still there. It's still there, and the shops are still there. It's a great idea, and it's the kind of idea... It's the hub zone idea that the SBA has come up with. You identify a certain zone and you put in the incentives necessary to bring that zone back. But, you know, the SBA and SCORE can't do that alone. You've got to have the support of the city. The city's got to do the things necessary to make that hub zone crime-free have the necessary things to allow a hub zone to emerge into a neighborhood market.
And talking about that, Larkin, is last week we were discussing this and an idea came forward from one of our listeners. Why aren't there more enterprise zones? available? Because in those enterprise zones, you're able to get some funding, you're able to get some tax reductions. Why aren't there more of them all over the place to spur business?
Well, you know, the natural elements of free enterprise have kind of done that for us in Philadelphia already. Manayunk.
Yes, very true.
Fishtown.
Fishtown.
Northern Liberties.
You know, free enterprise is making that happen. And I think Carl will agree that it's, you know, mostly driven by the real estate market.
Mm-hmm.
They find something glamorous, and somebody, and I can't think of the fellow's name that was responsible for Northern Liberties, but he invested big bucks over there. And the investment was probably a little bit bigger and too much up front. And Northern Liberties is struggling a little bit because of that.
And also because of the real estate market.
Right.
But, you know, I know someone who just bought a condo in Northern Liberties, and they're thrilled about the fact they get 10 years of tax abatements. That was an incentive to go in there.
Yes. Yes.
How about a 10-year tax abatement for businesses?
Well, you're asking, it would be like me going into Rick's meat market and saying, listen, I need another $10 or another buck and a half off a pound of the chicken breast.
For the next 10 years. After that, you can charge me the regular price.
Right, yeah. Whatever. The city is a business. I mean, they provide services. They pick up trash. They provide water. They provide gas. All of maybe some of them they shouldn't be doing. But
mm-hmm.
as a matter of fact, I would take all three of them away from the city and make them free enterprise.
Absolutely.
But at that, you know, they've got an infrastructure to care for, and crime to stop, and an education to provide. And we all can sit back and criticize.
And they're in the hole, and they want more,
right.
And crime's going up, and
right.
The streets are dirty. It's backwards.
And
it's backwards.
And 57% of the kids that go to Philadelphia high schools do not graduate.
Every single day I read the local news in the Philadelphia Inquirer, and if you open it up to the first page on the left are the little blurbs, and there is always, almost without exception, somebody or two somebodies killed in this city
mm-hmm.
every single day. Little 3-year-old girl the other day got caught in the crossfire. I mean, it's just, and now they want more money, and the school district is upside down. And I have been in a meeting. I hope none of them are listening. I would imagine they probably aren't, but I have been in a meeting with Philadelphia educators in a restaurant, in a large room, and I have watched the union chief go in there and fire them up. And they want more and more and more. It's just, sooner or later, we have to get back to sanity, and we have to get back to pride, because we've taken accomplishment away from people and pride by saying, here, we'll just give you this instead of teaching you how to do something about it.
And the most important thing you've said, Rick, is sooner or later. The question I have constantly as I sit back and look at Philadelphia, and I am, as tough as it is for me to say, I love Philadelphia and I'm a part of the fabric of this city, but I was born in Pittsburgh. I'm a Pittsburgher at heart.
Mm-hmm.
But I wonder how bad can it get in mm-hmm. Philadelphia before we have a politician that comes along and says, be damned with politics, be damned with unions, be damned with retail, be damned with taxes. We've got to fix this, and fix it now.
We've been putting Band-Aids on so many things for so long, we're really killing ourselves in the long run. Well, believe it or not, this hour has passed very, very quickly, and we have got to do this again, because I think more and more people are enjoying our broadcast because they get a nice education and a little bit more of what's happening in our particular environment. Before I go, I want to encourage you to listen to rebroadcasts by going to AmericanWorkersRadio.com and spread the word to your family members and friends, because our objective is to get at least 50-50 of everything that is sold in our stores, 50% domestic and 50% imported products. Until next time, I wish you the very best. David Zenya.